to Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
Hello, and welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. This is not Rick Hale and Karen Frazier. They are on vacation. So I am here. This is Cheryl Knight. I'm here with Chad Wilson, my co-host for the night. Hey, Chad, how you doing today?
Good. They're stuck with us for another week.
Yeah, just another week, and then Rick returns. Karen, unfortunately, is not returning until September. And she's going to take some time off until September, but then we'll be back to our regular hosts. So during August, Rick and his co-investigator, Amy, will be our hosts, and we'll have some fun. We have some good interviews lined up, actually. So I'm excited about that. Tonight, we have a pre-recorded interview that we're going to air, and the interview is with Amy Allen and Steve DeShavi of The Dead Files. Rick Hale actually pre-recorded this a few weeks ago, and so we're excited to air it tonight. I believe the latest season of Dead Files just ended last week, if I'm correct. But I believe they will be coming back soon with the next season, so that's pretty cool. The show's a little different than a lot of the shows on the air, and Rick, Amy, and Steve talk about that during the interview. There's a lot of good behind-the-scenes discussion, which really sheds light on a lot of the who's, hows, whys of the show and how it gets done. And it's, I always forget, Chad, that paranormal TV is not always representative of the entire process. In fact, it's usually not. It's a long process that gets cut and edited down to, you know, a few minutes out of hours and hours, days, maybe even sometimes, of work. So you got to keep in mind when you're watching, you know, the paranormal shows, the fact that there's a lot cut out because, of course, it's entertainment and you only have an hour to fill. So you do have to cut stuff out.
Well, you actually have less than an hour.
Ah, good point. Less than an hour with commercials.
It's like 47 minutes or whatever for an hour show.
Wow, that's a lot of commercials.
Yeah. Well, they got to pay the bills.
Yeah, definitely. So we have that interview coming up in just a few minutes. And then after that, we're going to have a mini paranormal roundtable with some of our friends and fellow co-hosts from Z-Talk Radio. We'll have Chris Davis and Jenny Gurney from Valley Ghost Hunting. And Ryan Misha from Pistols Paranormal team, and they all have shows here on Z-Talk Radio. So I'm excited to talk a little paranormal investigation techniques and about UFOs and more TV talk and all sorts of good stuff, evidence, review, stuff like that. That'll be up, though, after the airing of our interview with Amy and Steve. But before, I just want to take a few minutes, Chad, and ask you, because you know I love talking about paranormal TV.
Yeah.
Okay, it's one of my favorite topics. Because I personally love paranormal TV, so I love talking about it. But last week, we actually talked a little bit about it, but I wanted to ask you about one of my favorite shows. I think it's one of your favorites, too. And it came back on a new season, I believe, came back on a few weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
I
think it was last week.
And that show is called Destination Truth.
I thought it was a Paranormal Byway.
You mean Highway? Bypass? What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Paranormal Bypass.
I think we should do a show called Paranormal Bypass that's going to compete with Paranormal. Or not compete, but maybe complement Paranormal Highway.
There's something to be said about Paranormal TV.
Yes.
Reality TV. It's not really, in a sense, reality. So.
True.
I mean, they, it's like Ghost Hunters, they edit stuff to make it look like something happened when it could have been something totally unrelated, that they're basically just edited two pieces of film together or whatever, video, and, you know, it gives a wrong impression about what's going on.
My favorite is when you get a big gasp from an investigator and their eyes go real wide and then you cut to commercial.
Well, see, on Destination Truth, it's like they always like fall off something. They're like, whoa! And then they cut to the commercial and they come back and it's like, whatever.
That's the excitement, though.
But it's only exciting the first two or three times.
Oh, okay. Well, tell me about what you like about Destination Truth.
Humor.
Yeah.
That's about it.
I mean,
they're kind of compelling with some of the stuff they've gotten.
Oh, okay.
But they're just becoming like every other paranormal show out there. You know, it's just, you know, what was that? You know, and it's really, usually it's nothing.
So what about the show the other night where they caught something interesting, possibly, well, I guess it was a UFO because they couldn't identify it.
And the
expert or specialist they took the video to couldn't identify it. So,
well, see, a UFO is an unidentified flying object. Doesn't mean it's an alien spacecraft. It just means it's an unidentified flying object. So, yes, it was a UFO, but what it was, you know, all they seen was some light flying around. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, tell me about a show. Okay. I really like Destination Truth. I'm sorry, I thought you did too.
I don't like it as much.
My
so
mistake.
Used to,
yeah, okay. Like, you still like it a lot better. But yeah. What show would you say you enjoy and can recommend for others to watch?
Well, I'm more of an old school, In Search of. I like shows that ask questions.
Okay.
Not so much. They don't so much try to provide answers. They just ask questions and make you think about what's going on out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just prefer that kind of show.
Yeah.
I don't really care much for reality shows per se.
Well, I really like case file shows. Like, I love Paranormal Witness. I love this new show called School Spirits. Shows like that feature the case files, like Haunting. Haunted. What's the other one that I really like on Animal Planet? What's that one called? Haunted.
The Haunted.
Yeah, that's a good one. Case Files. I just like watching other people's experiences.
What about Fact or Fake?
I like that one, but for different reasons. I like how they set about to try and recreate the activity.
But.
Mm-hmm.
You do realize just because you can recreate something doesn't mean that's what it was.
Oh, yeah. You know, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It could just happen to be the same. It could look the same. It could sound the same. But it doesn't mean it's the same. I get that. So. All right. Well, we'll have lots of good discussion in our roundtable later on. But right now, I think we're going to go ahead and get to the interview with Amy and Steve, and it is again hosted by Rick Hale. We did have a little bit of audio upload problems. There was a little bit of choppiness. Unfortunately, the interview was a total of 100 an hour and 15 minutes, and I cut out about 15 minutes, unfortunately, because it was very hard to listen to. There's maybe about four or five minutes of a little bit of choppiness in the interview that we're going to play. That's about an hour long, but it's just real quick and then it's over. But it luckily most of the interview came through. I'm so happy because it's a really good interview and I'm excited to play it. So with that, you are listening to Paranormal Underground Radio on Z Talk Radio, and we will be right back with Rick Hale's interview with Stevie and Amy from Stevie and Amy. All right. that actually would be with Steve and Amy from the Dead Files.
I'm sure he'll appreciate that.
Hi, Rick.
They'll probably say the
How you
F
doing?
Word or whatever.
All right. Anyway, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Station identification. You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network. Operating frequency on ZTalkRadio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey, everybody. This is Rick with Paranormal Underground Radio. Anybody who knows me or knows of me or listens to the show, they know that I'm not a huge fan of paranormal television. Especially my wife, who sits with me, because I have to watch the shows every now and then so I can discuss them intelligently on the air, and usually it ends with me grunting and epic facepalms and turning off the TV in disgust. But however, there is one television show that I actually can stomach and watch and actually like very much for two reasons. I'm going to say one big reason. I do believe that they get it right, and the cast of this television show is joining me today. He is a former New York City homicide detective, as well as the best-dressed paranormal investigator since Harry Price, and also is Amy Allen and Steve Dushavi and Amy Allen from The Dead Files. Amy is a physical medium. Would you say that that's what you are, Amy?
Yes.
Okay. Well, guys, welcome to the Underground, and thanks for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
No problem. We appreciate you having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
So, you know, this is something that I like to, ask everybody, but especially when we have, like, an investigator on the show. What brought you into, you know, being interested in the paranormal? And, like I tell everybody, I do reserve the right to make fun of you if you say that your D&D game let out early on a Wednesday night and you decided to catch a super cool new television show on the Sci-Fi Channel. So... You know what? We're going to start with Steve. Steve, how is it that a New York City homicide detective gets involved with this most rarefied of fields? What sparked your interest?
Well, actually, the producer of the show was the one who sparked my interest. When it comes to paranormal stuff, I always consider myself an open-minded skeptic. I never really watched the shows, so when people reference shows to me, I'm like, I have no clue what you're talking about, like other shows.
That's not a bad thing.
Yeah. Right. But he, you know, when he first approached me about working with a psychic or a physical medium, as I've learned, I was like, nah, what are you kidding me? Because me and the producer had some history because I was on the documentary for the NYPD, and that's how he asked me if I wanted to do more television.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm an investigator. I have nothing to do with, ghost hunting. I hate that word to begin with, but...
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah, and he flew me out to Denver to meet Amy and a few other people and do the pilot. And once I met Amy, I was just like, well, I realized it was all legit and she was the real deal. And I was like, well, if I can believe this, anybody can. So, you know, it sounds like a good concept.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very difficult way of working. I'm used to working with a partner, and this is a difficult thing for me, working alone and not being with my partner. That's the best part for me is the reveal, because I get to sit down with her finally and discuss the case, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Amy's really the one who turned me, not so much the genre, I should say. You know, people say, oh, I love this ghost hunting show. We're not ghost hunters. We're investigators with two different skill sets.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, what about you, Amy? I mean, obviously you were, I'm assuming you were born with the abilities that you have, but was there something that either sparked those abilities, that kind of turned them on? Was there, you know, a situation as a child where it was like, hey, you know, I have this ability, and I see dead people? How did it start for you?
It's complicated, but,
sure.
You know, I had the ability as a child, didn't really understand that I had this ability or what was really going on. You know what I mean? Like, I really didn't know that it was unusual or anything of that nature.
Sure.
When, you know, I had an experience when my grandmother came back, and I knew she was dead. And I was probably, like, 8.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, okay, that's weird. You know what I mean? But then I kind of, my whole life, I guess I haven't really wanted to deal with that. I don't know how to really explain it. But, you know, they were just people around, whatever. I was terrified of death because mm-hmm. what I knew of death was, you know, pretty much all the people I came into contact with, dead people, mm-hmm. they weren't very happy people.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I was really, I had a problem with that. And I started kind of reading books you know, around 8 or 9 to try to understand this. So, like, any kind of anything, which really there wasn't that much out there. There was this book called The Supernatural.
Yeah, I remember it very well.
Yeah, that was my first, you know, real introduction, you know, and it just created more questions than it answers for me. And, my parents, my father especially, is very scientific minded.
Okay.
And so I grew up in a household that's very much, you know, we ask these questions, we want the valid, logical answers, and, you know, we need to know from A to Z how to get those. And so I really just read most of all the scientific journal and anything scientific I could get my hands on.
Mm-hmm.
And it still obviously didn't answer any of the questions regarding this other stuff that was going on.
Sure.
And then I thought, now I went through the phase, you know, that I thought I was crazy. I'm like, mm-hmm. Well, I must be insane. And I went to doctors and psychologists and psychiatrists.
Right. I mean, that just seems to be a logical step for some people. I work in the psychiatric field myself, and it's like, mm-hmm. I work with kids who have behavioral and learning disorders and stuff like that, and I've actually come across one kid who wasn't crazy, mm-hmm. but I do believe that he was becoming sensitive to the paranormal, and I think that happens at a young age.
Or dealing with it. You know, there's a lot of, I think a lot of children out there who, you know, when I hit my teens, I completely just went crazy because I was trying to run away from everything. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of children out there who are trying to deal with this. And at that age, you really can't. You can't comprehend it. You can't really, you know, assess this and make sense of your world because it's not matching with anybody else's experiences.
Right.
And, so I ended up, these doctors in area, well, you know, you're fine, you're not crazy, this and this. And I ended up meeting Dr. William Rohl.
Yes, very respected, and may you rest in peace.
Yes.
Yeah.
And great man.
Yes, very
and
great man.
He ended up testing me. At the same time, I was being tested by Dr. Gary Schwartz, because I was going to the University of Arizona for psychology and sociology. And so I was being tested by him, and then I met Dr. William Rohl, who started testing me as well. And I really respected his methodologies and the way that he approached things. Right. And so I ended up working solely with Dr. William Rohl. He tested me for quite a few years and then became my mentor. And mentored me for about 4 years after I graduated.
Sure. Yeah,
I created a methodology for testing people utilizing statistics who claim to have abilities. So that's one research project that I've been doing for the last 10 years, and also field investigation techniques as well. So those were my two things. Right. And still trying to run away from the mediumship. And then, but it just kept popping up, and I finally decided just to deal with it.
Well, I think it's something that would be difficult for you to run away from. You're walking down the street every 5 seconds and somebody walks up to you and goes, "Hi, honey, I'm dead. You want to talk?" I would imagine that's something difficult to run away from.
Well, I talked to them throughout the years, you know, I did work with, my specialty was more working with agents and investigators and, like Steve, like homicide detectives and FBI agents, people like that.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of cases I did on and off for, 20 years. But, and also, you know, the occasional investigations. I had a little group, a paranormal investigation group, and we would do occasional investigations. I mean, I've done about 400 investigations. Yeah.
Okay. I can't even quite touch that. I think probably in the last 3 years alone, I've maybe done 36, 37. But,
research, too.
Well, sure.
The research gets you out there a lot.
No, absolutely. You know, let's talk about some of the things that you have done in the past before you did the television show, and then we'll jump into the television show. One of the cases that always really interested me, and Dr. Roll was a part of this as well as you, was the Heidi Weirich case. Yeah. I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly. Weirich, correct?
Yeah, Weirich. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And the whole Mr. Gordy thing. Now, I was recently reading on the internet. Of course, you're going to have your haters out there, and they're all like, well, Heidi Weirich, she was a fake, a phony, and of course, your name gets brought into it,
no.
You know, Amy Allen, and it's like, Okay, I wasn't there, but for my personal criteria, not as a ghost hunter or a paranormal investigator, but a psychical researcher, just from watching that and looking at the body language of people, you could tell that this was a family that was terrified. Can you, you know, elaborate a little bit more on what exactly it is that you dealt with the Weirichs?
Well, my personal interaction with them was limited because that was actually one of the test walks that Dr. Roll had me do.
Okay.
So I had no prior knowledge of the case. I didn't even know where the hell I was going. You know, the same thing that you see on the show is what happened in that case. He had me do several walks of several different houses on the same block. And obviously, you know, I got my information, whatever. Afterwards was when I was able to, kind of a reveal. I was able to talk to the family, meet them, and all of this. And then after that, it was one of the cases that Dr. Roll opened up to me and discussed very openly over the years because, you know, our expertise area is in poltergeist and all of that.
Right.
So anyways, that was a poltergeist manifestation case, which happened over many, many years. You know, Dr. Roll had been involved with them for many, many, many years. This is a situation where under, close observation, you know, Heidi had been dragged, you know, down the hall by her hair, by unseen, you know, it was extremely severe. And a lot of things don't make television, and especially when there's personal things, you know, from doing investigations, it goes much further and much deeper than this place of being haunted. There's a lot of psychological dynamics that are happening within the family.
Right.
And this case was very much like that.
Yeah.
And it was very severe as far as the physical attacks from the PK entity. You know, they were being cut, they were being pushed around, things were being thrown around. I mean, it wasn't just a little chair moving, trust me.
No, I can see that. I mean, even, you know, when I look at that, I've actually investigated many cases myself where it's like, they are experiencing a poltergeist type thing, and it seems like the poltergeist has either invited, the energy has either woken up things that were previously in the house, or invited things in. And I've actually seen families break up because of it, and it's really quite scary.
You know, Heidi is a physical medium, and she does, her secondary ability is, she has psychokinesis, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So she... coming into the house, there were dead individuals that were around that house that she was making contact with
in a healthy way.
Correct.
Yeah.
In a healthy, good, you know, medium way. And but then, you know, things happened. And what can happen is that over a period of time, when poltergeist, which was stemming from a living agent, Heidi, develops, they can pull the energy from the existing dead people that are around them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So Mr. Gordy is one. There's another entity. There's another. So there's now three basically kind of trapped dead individuals that are being fed upon for their energy specifically.
Right.
And then you have the energy of the individual who has collected them and has created this poltergeist.
Sure.
That's also feeding in. And these are typically issues that are not being communicated, are not being verbalized, that are adding this energy. And unfortunately, over some, you know, in some very dramatic cases, it can become its own manifestation, its own entity.
That it takes on a life of its own, correct?
Correct. To some extent, it still kind of does the bidding, so to speak, of the creator, the living agent creator, but it had become a full-blown entity, which consists of the creator and any of the dead that have been collected to manifest it.
See, I think that that's almost such a, I mean, just to think about that, it's terrifying. And there's been other cases in the past. A couple weeks ago, I had a chance to talk to Guy Playfair, and, you know, he was the fascinating gentleman to just be able to speak to. And he would agree with something like that. And I think he did on the air that it seemed that this energy can just, like, it's like a huge ball of energy that just sort of shoots out and just sucks everything back in, almost like a reverse and then a actual working black hole of energy, as you will, mm-hmm. as you know, if you would say. Mm-hmm. But of course, there's other, that. Huh?
Oh, I'm sure I could see that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and it's just, you know, you can read about such cases as the Wyricks. You can see it on television. You know, of course, I own a haunting in Georgia. But I don't think until you experience it firsthand that you can never really understand how incredibly scary it can be.
It is. A lot of people will tell, also the case on a haunting, the curse, or cursed, I think they call it, mm-hmm. with Romy, that was a severe PK manifestation.
Sure.
And the thing about it is that most people will ask, oh, what's your scariest, you know, they ask you, what was your scariest case, da da da, da. You know, what scared you
the most? You're taking the wind out of my sails, Amy, so.
Oh, and I'm like, living people.
Yeah.
The living people.
Well, Steve, you seem to have something to say about that. I hear you laugh a little bit in the background. What are your feelings about that?
Just made me think of some people. I get comments all the time, Steve, aren't you scared of these locations? And you know what? I've been shot at 6 times, been in 3 shootings, and you know what? That's what scares me, people. Mm-hmm. People with guns in their hands, what scares me. Not the dead so much. And that's the only reason I got a chuckle. Is I get, when people are like, oh, aren't you afraid going into these locations? And, you know, not really. You know, I feel as long as I'm working with Amy, I'm okay, I'm good.
So that's your protection.
You know, I'm going to protect her from the living. She'll protect me from the dead. So that's the way I look at it. So.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
actually sounds like a perfect kind of partnership. So
yeah,
let's,
totally.
Yeah, so let's go into the television show. You know, like I was telling you guys before we started taping here, I actually like the show very much. I think it's a show
that, no problem.
It's I think it's a show that gets it right, and my wife can actually sit on the couch and stomach watching an hour of television with me without ripping and tearing, and you know, like it's an epic facepalm, and it's like, God, just please would you go away. However, what I like about your guys' show is that you seem to get it right. For example,
I have to cut you off, but you know, sure. Before me and Amy started this show, and you know, we sat down with the producer, to his credit, you know, we're pains in the asses about what we want. Mm-hmm. We don't want TV changing the way we do investigations.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And he was respectful of it, and Travis Town was very respectful of it. And, you know, I wouldn't do the show just to do a show to get on TV. I mean, for me, I was working already. I didn't really need a job, and if I'm not going to do it the right way, I don't want to do it at all. And they were really, really good about it. Amy's got a lot of rules and regulations, and they're easy to abide by on my end.
Sure.
But to producers' credit, they really do a bang-up job. People say, ah, isn't it bullshit? Isn't this all made up? No, I get very defensive, and then I got to just sit back and say, you know, whatever. I know in my heart what we do, and we, you know, the way we do our show is legitimate, and it's got integrity that it's, you know, sort of utmost of my opinion. So when somebody like you likes the show, that's what we're all about, is the fact that we can reach both audiences. We're people that are just into the paranormal but have that little bit of doubt. I think our show can take that doubt away.
Yeah.
And, you know, my thing going in was, you know, I love Jim Casey because, you know, I've been approached over the years many times to do many different types of shows, and I wouldn't do it unless it was done right. And, like, you know, by what Dr. Roll and I set up as far as how to investigate in the field, and that these protocols had to be followed to a T. And Jim Casey is the only one who was like, you know what, it's insane for television to do something like that, but, you know, I'm going to give this a shot. And have been amazing.
Yeah. I've had some experience with Hollywood, working security for them, and plus I've been on a couple other shows. And there's nobody really out there with integrity when it comes to Hollywood. I mean, they just, and I don't give a shit if anybody hears this or not, but in my opinion, and Jim, like she says about Jim Casey, he's all about integrity and what he wants to do it right or don't do it at all. I mean, if we have certain things, you know, and, you know, to his credit, I mean, Hollywood's all about just let's make it work one way or another. Let's fix it. We just did an episode. I don't know if we should even talk about it. We just did an episode where, you know, nothing, not everything fits when we work. Not everything fits.
Right.
Sure. Yeah, of course.
Right. And that's the whole point of the show. I mean, my job is to try to make it, you know, her findings, where I can at least help her out and say, yeah, you know what, your hit was right. But sometimes, you know what, it doesn't happen, and that's okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I, you know, my thing is, if you ever meet a sensitive who claims that they're 100% accurate, you need to walk out the door and go find somebody else.
Yeah.
Because no sensitive I've ever worked with or ever tested, including myself, is 100% accurate. And that's why with my methodology, I actually use two other different types of tested sensitives. Because that's the only way you're going to get the full story.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it's the same thing on my end, only differently. It's like with me, whenever I hear a detective say, well, I solved this, I did that, hey, pal, it's a joint effort. It's a team effort. It's all the bullshit. It, you know,
well, it's all about the fish that got away.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
So, well, there's, you know, two things that I find very interesting about the show. One is let's face it, television, paranormal television shows are not very psychic friendly to begin with.
No.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, I will not work an investigation without physical medium that I work with, Nancy Laporta. I will not do an investigation without her, either with or with her impressions before. And you know, it almost seems like there is almost a general, I don't want to use the term hatred because I think that's a little bit too strong, but a major mistrust. I speak to a lot of like young, like people who are just coming in the field right now, and they're like, well, we believe in ghosts, but we don't believe in psychics. And then they go into this huge dissertation about how bullshit psychics are, and it's like, you know what I'm saying? I mean, have you guys come up against that kind of thing where people are like, you know, we don't work with psychics, Amy. You know, you're full of crap. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Everybody needs to take a step back. Those instruments that are being utilized, just like the senses, have to be tested in an experimental manner and replicated. This has not been done, okay?
Right.
So as far as being skeptical against people with abilities, you got to be skeptical against the technology as well until all of these things have been researched the right way.
Right. I oftentimes tell people, and we're going to jump into the equipment or lack thereof on your show. You know, I oftentimes tell people that my 18-month-old plays with my EMF detector, but my compass, it ain't happening. And I seem to remember, like, one of my uncles is he's an electrician by trade, and I remember seeing an old school EMF detector. It was this big, huge box with some dials on it and a couple of probes, and you kind of had to wear it around your neck and strapped underneath your arm. But when you say that, you're right. It's like these things were not designed for the use, and they're not really properly experimented upon. Which is why another thing that I like about your show is you guys, I mean, Steve, you don't go into a house, or Amy, you guys don't go into a house waving an EMF detector around.
No, and I wouldn't. you couldn't pay me to do it. Number one, I'm not a ghost hunter, whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
Number two, when I talk to people, I believe nothing.
Mm-hmm.
They got to convince me to tell me the truth, and that's just the nature of the beast and where I came from.
Well, I would imagine that, you know, being 20-plus years in the New York City homicide, that you have a very finely attenuated bullshit-o-meter, correct?
Oh, without a doubt. People, you know, I could smile in your face and at the same time in the back of my head say, you're full of shit. you know, and people, you know, I get them to think that I'm trusting and everything they say is great, but, you know, there's always my detective that comes out, and, you know, a lot of the questions I ask never, ever make it to air, and they never will.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I can imagine so.
And it's frustrating a little bit for me, because I really want people to know that I am asking these tough questions, and it's TV, it's the Travel Channel, maybe if it was HBO, I don't know. But I get in people's grill, I get, you know, I ask the hard questions. Listen, are you a psycho, are you taking medication, you know, do you drink during the day, you know, do you have psychiatric problems, what's going on that you may be seeing this stuff?
Sure.
Then, when I think that they're legit, or somewhat legit, then I'll start asking the investigative questions. And I'm telling right off the bat, listen, you're not going to like some of the questions I ask you. You're going to have to deal with it, or I'm out the door. So that stuff's never going to make it to air, and I understand completely why it won't.
Yeah.
But I just, for me, it kind of annoys me that people think I'm not doing a 100% job. But when you see the show, if I get two questions per interview out, it's a lot.
You know? Yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah, my interviews last anywhere from an hour to 2 hours.
Yeah, it's... It's not like Ghostbusters, you know, where they're like, are you Alice, you know, currently menstruating right now? I can imagine you don't get to really ask those kind of questions.
No, you know, but I asked, you know, and a lot of what I find I'm doing now is, which I'm shocked by, is I ask questions pertinent to what I think Amy's going to need to know, but I would never have asked 2 years ago.
Sure. What is the very first step that you guys do in an investigation?
Well, it starts with the vetting of the client, which I have involvement with that Amy doesn't.
Okay.
Because we're not just because people say, I got spooks running around my house, come investigate it, you know, that doesn't fly with me. With me and the producers, you know, they'll call me and say, listen, we got this. I says, well, I want you to ask A, B, C, and D, and then get back to me with the response. So I'm kind of like interviewing clients without them knowing I'm interviewing them. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Perfect sense.
It's going to a third party so that I'm not tainted going in as far as... I want my interviews to be fresh.
Right.
So if I speak to somebody personally over the phone or see them before I start the investigation, it doesn't work. So the vetting process is the beginning. Once we think we got... And it, you know, this is all going to be approved by the producers and Travel Channel, obviously. And then we take it from there, and then we'll just go in and just start the investigation. And basically, you know, it'll start out with me interviewing clients, and then Amy doing the walk. And you know, it's tough for the producers because they're working like 18-hour days because we're doing half of my day, half of Amy's day. You know, and then you know, it's an 8-day investigation period, and a lot's got to get done in that time. I still use a lot of my resources that are on the job. You know, I'll still make a phone call. Oh, I don't know if I should be saying this, but, you know, I'll still make a phone call for people to do background stuff for me to find out, you know, certain things are on the up, certain people are on the up and up.
Yeah, I wish I had those kind of resources.
Well, you know, I'll do a criminal background search and see if a guy's, you know, a person's been collared or, you know, that nobody really knows I do.
Right.
You know, and for me, it's just my way of protecting Amy and myself, and even the show for that matter.
Yeah,
I just kind of want to make sure that people aren't just looking to get on TV and get their 15 minutes of fame. They have a legitimate problem. You know, if they have a legitimate problem, and Amy can help them, I want to help. That's the whole point of doing the show.
Sure.
So, but that's how the investigation starts out, and then, and we don't know where it's going to lead, depending on what my questioning, where it takes us. So I don't know, like, our list of people I want to talk to may change depending on what I hear. You know, I need to turn around and say, you know, we need to talk to this person, and we got to get a hold of that person.
So it's basically it's an ABC all the way through a Z kind of thing.
Yeah, well, you know, investigations, you take it where your investigation, you go where it takes you. You know,
oh, sure.
You can't, you know, you have a map, but sometimes you got to go left or right depending on, you know, how it goes.
Right.
I mean, now as far as Amy's thing, I have no clue what goes on with her. You know, I don't even get to see her walk.
I have it easy. I don't even know where I'm going until I get to the airport, and then I only know the city. So Matt and I have to pack about 8,000 bags. I don't know if it's going to be cold or hot.
No.
We just get on the plane
and go.
Get there. We're isolated. And then I go do the walk.
Now,
that's
Matt.
Not related.
Yeah. So Matt is Mr. Amy Allen, correct? He's your husband?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the walkthrough thing is really quite interesting to me. I've never done anything like that before. What exactly is Matt's function besides just the camera?
Well, I mean, it's obviously different for the television show. You know, before, on regular, regular investigations, he would. He's a hardcore skeptic.
Mm-hmm.
Actually.
Yeah, he kind of looks like
I am. Yeah, he's more skeptic than me.
Yeah, you could see it in his body
language. Very, very.
Yeah, totally.
He's very, very skeptic.
Yeah.
And which, you know, causes a lot of issues sometimes, but anyways. And so he's a hardcore skeptic, and, so he would assist when I would be testing people who claim to have sensitivities. And he, part of that, one of the things is doing a blind walk, going to a location they have no prior information, and et cetera, et cetera. And he would assist just asking those, who, what, why, when, and where questions so that it would allow us to be able to look up, historical information after the fact to see if they were getting valid hits. So he'll go into the location, he'll remove anything that could influence my walk in any way, shape, or form.
Now, let me ask you something.
Isolated.
Right. Let me just ask you something about that, because I've known people who can do things with, like, photo scrying. Is that why you remove things like photos? Are you able to do that?
Yeah, it's for multiple reasons. When I do my walk, I'm kind of in an altered state of consciousness.
Sure.
And when you're in that state, you're very susceptible to any type of suggestion. So let's say there's a picture on the wall with, like, a kid, and he's dressed up like a clown. Next thing you know, I'm on my walk, and I'm talking about clowns. And it's because I'm in that... or there's a Christmas tree. Next thing you know, I'm talking about Christmas trees. You know what I mean? So you're in a very suggestible state. And there also is information that could potentially be gathered, that the sensitive didn't know anything about. But here's this frickin' date plastered on the wall of when the place was built.
Right.
That needs to be covered up. There's a multitude of reasons why it has to be cleaned thoroughly.
Sure. Well, no, I can see that. Oftentimes when watching the show, my wife has asked me, she's like, well, what is it with Amy? No offense, but she seems like she's acting kind of strange. And I'm like, when they're on the job, man, they're like on a different plane.
I consider it being open.
Mm-hmm.
And I do change my vibrational level so that I can communicate with the dead. On a different molecular vibrational level than we are.
Right, right.
Which is why physical mediums get sick all the time.
Yeah, I've actually had to drag Nancy out of a couple of places because she was so incredibly overwhelmed that she could not carry on the investigation any longer. So, yeah, I know what that's like. It's definitely something that you have to do. Steve, have you ever had that kind of experience working with Amy? Have you ever, had to just remove her from a situation?
No, I'm not with her on the walk, and it's frustrating for me because when I do see her on the walk and I see she gets a little upset or frightened or something, I just want to wish I was there to protect her.
Sure.
Even though I know all the guys are there and, to film it, I'm very protective of her, and it drives me absolutely insane knowing that she's upset or frightened by something, but I've never had to... once in a while at the reveal, she's been uncomfortable, and then I'm always rubbing her back to make sure she's okay. I don't know if that counts.
Well, it counts. It's comforting.
She'll be, Yeah, she'll be at the reveal. Sometimes she's still open, and we did that reveal in Elizabeth City where the dead girl was actually underneath the table with us.
Okay.
She, you know, that's Amy got really upset when she found out what actually happened to the girl, and she had to get up from the table.
Yeah.
I didn't know she left us with a dead person, but, you know, she just walked off. But, you know, I've never been had to physically take her out of a situation because I'm not there for the walk, number one. Number two, I think she knows how to handle it. She's really, really good at it.
Yeah.
Sure. I've been doing it. Since I was a kid.
Right. You know, she could take care of herself. But sometimes when I see the walk, like on last night watching the walk, she was a little upset at certain things. And, you know, it kind of bothers me that I'm not there to protect her. But I know Matt's there and I know the guys are there. So,
sure.
But it is what it is. And she knows how to handle it probably better than anybody else could.
You know, in the Skype chat room, Cheryl Knight, our producer, asked me, and there's going to be one specific episode that I'm going to ask about concerning this this entity. Amy, you know, Steve, either one of you guys, do you guys believe in the whole idea of the fallen angel demonic thing? Or And the reason I ask that is because there was that one episode where you had seen something and had it drawn, and let's face it, that looks like the stereotypical demon, and it was in that restaurant. What are your thoughts on the preternatural?
Santa Claus. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you want to go first, Steve? Or?
Well, do I believe in, like, demons and stuff like that?
Yes.
Honestly, I don't know. I really don't. I can't say yes or no. I just, I'm a little more open now to afterlife after working with Amy.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure I'm as happy about it as I thought I would be.
Sure.
Because I think about it more now about, geez, I don't want to get stuck here and be one of these people that just don't get it and don't move on. I just don't know if I believe that there are demons or angels, to be honest with you. I don't know. But I do believe that it is something else supernatural going on other than, you know, our physical bodies being here.
I guess you would...
I think there's something going on after life. I just don't know that I buy into the demons and the good and the evil thing. That's where I kind of like, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, Amy, what about you? I mean, this thing that you saw in the restaurant, I wish I could remember the name of the episode. Or
It was Santa Quinn. I don't know what the name of the episode was.
It was the one with the restaurant. I know you guys know what I'm talking about. You seem to be very very affected by this thing that you had seen. What would you say that was? Was it a demon or was it, you know, a human spirit?
Yeah, it was it actually was probably about 60 human consciousness.
Okay.
Okay.
I was just asking if you could elaborate on that. Hello. I was just asking if you could elaborate on that a little bit.
Basically, what had gone on there was there was a Native American who placed a curse on the land. And what happened was the first white man to die in that location kind of became, for lack of a better term, a soul collector.
Okay.
And so anyone who spends a large amount of time in that area can be tagged by this entity, and over the many, many years that have passed, there seems to be an accumulation of about 60 to 70 dead individuals that have been amassed by this entity.
It seems like an inordinate amount of dead people in one place at one time.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And their energies are all flowing together to create one kind of large entity, so to speak. And they've kind of lost their personal, their personality, their individual personalities. And they've become, unfortunately, a negative collective consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And their sole thing is to collect more
more people, more energy, and it's all due to this curse.
Yeah.
And when I encountered this, it projected back to me something that I had seen in my childhood that had scared me very, very badly. And that's what that image is.
It kind of looked like a frogman, I guess you could, you know, say.
Yeah, it was scary. I had encountered it when I was much younger. As far as the original thing that I encountered when I was much younger, you know, I was about 14, 13 when I first had dealings with that particular entity. Sure. You know, I really can't say if it was a demon or not because I was so young at the time. I didn't have the skills, the tools necessary to be able to evaluate what was happening to me at that time.
Right. No, I don't know. It's like I talk to some people who, you know, they're like, they say that, you know, after you spend so much time in the field and you do so much, that, yeah, you kind of do start to get a sensitivity, start to, like, form it. You know, Amy, what do you think about that, you know, being more of a, you know, parapsychology being more your thing? Do you think that people are born with these abilities or they can acquire them? Okay.
I believe that they are born with them, and I think that, you know, the research that I've done seems to suggest that some people will remain open because typically it's associated with some type of severe trauma that they experienced as children. And because of that, they'll remain open. And some children will close down because what it seems to be is a type of survival instinct, okay? We're all animals, and when we're born, we have a heightened survival instinct, okay?
Yeah.
Just like in the wild.
Right.
And what happens is if you suffer traumas as a child, you're not going to shut down those sensitivities that may protect you from more trauma.
It's a fight or flight mechanism.
You're going to become more sensitive. Correct.
Right.
You're going to become more sensitive. And so you stay open. Even though it's not like, as humans, we don't need all of those sensitivities to be on high alert anymore because of, you know, how we live in today's society. Unfortunately, for some children who go through those traumas, they have them. And those are children you'll see, you know, who suffer from, you know, PTSD or anxiety, depression, all of these things that also manifest because they're always on that, you know, flight or fight.
Yeah.
And we as humans today don't need that. But they remain open. Other children, nothing happens. They close down because the society says, well, this is weird and that doesn't exist and yada yada, religion, whatever it may be, that shuts those children down. That doesn't mean that years later, after they've been in a severe car accident or they're doing paranormal investigations and weird things have happened, that sensitivity isn't going to pop right back open because they're going through some type of trauma, whether it be a high or lower degree.
See, no, I've always
possible.
Yeah, but and there's something that I've always wondered about this too. Oftentimes you hear that, well, I inherited this from my mom and from my grandmother and, you know, so forth and so on. I really honestly do believe that there is a biological component that is involved.
Well, biological and environmental as to if the person remains open or not. Both of my parents have it. My father, it's through his male line and his family. My mother, it's through her female line. But there will be children who come from highly sensitive families who are not open because the environmental issues haven't developed to make that a necessity for them to remain open. But they may open years later due to some other type of activity, and they'll be extremely sensitive.
Sure.
But, yeah, so it's biological and environmental. Now, somebody asked me, you know, is it a good thing to be open like this? And I'm like, no, I really can't say that it is, because I feel that in evolutionary terms, we don't need to be like this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you, I'm sure you know, senseless have a lot of health issues.
Yes.
Or, you know, people say, you know, they've got this disease or that disease, or they have anxiety, or they have this or this. And it's because, you know, we don't have to be on alert 24/7 like we did when there was a saber-toothed tiger standing behind us. You know? So it's not necessarily a great thing.
Mm-hmm. So when you guys...
on alert.
Well, I would imagine so. I mean, especially if you've been involved in six shootings, and
I'm always my antenna's always up. So.
Yeah, I can
but
definitely
believe
that.
That's with the living, though, so I don't know.
Well,
Same difference.
Well, it's like when I'm working with the kids that I work with. I do work the night shift, and for the most part, they are sleeping. But at the same time, I have to be extremely alert. It's like after a while, I get to learn each and every single kid's sleeping pattern.
Right.
And I know that this snore is not a snore, but this is actually you waking up and wanting to start like a rash of shit with me. Yeah. But thankfully, that doesn't happen too much. But, you know, when you guys, you know, let's talk a little bit more about the show. The roundtable reveal at the end of each shows, it looks like there is a lot of emotion and drama that's going on. Is that the case, or is that, you know, pretty much due to editing of the show?
No, that's pretty organic as far as, you know, people start crying and, it's very difficult not to console them.
Mm-hmm.
And but they need to hear everything because they did bring us in. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's funny, at the end of my interviews with people, I give them a disclaimer. That never makes it to air, but I give them the disclaimer. Listen, I don't know what Amy's going to tell you. I have no idea what she's going to see, what she's going to find.
Mm-hmm.
You may not like what you hear. You've got to be prepared for that. And what happens is, I think people just think I'm just saying it to say it, like for TV value, but I usually tell them on the side. And when they hear some of this stuff, it hits them. They're like, oh, shit, maybe I bit off more than I could chew here. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't want to know this stuff. And it comes out, and all that stuff is pretty organic. The crying and everything is pretty... I don't know how the editing goes, because when we're sitting down at the reveal, it's almost like you said, it's just a roundtable conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it's edited, I'm sure it comes in to play the way it should play, you know, as far as getting the story out, getting, mm-hmm. you know, what we need to get out. But those reveals can last anywhere from minimum 2 to 5 hours.
Amy, when you guys do a reveal, how do you feel when Steve, you know, finds stuff that backs up, you know, your walk and your experience, what you experience? How does that make you feel?
Well, you know, whether it's Steve doing it or the client confirming it, I'm always, because I'm an open-minded skeptic, I'm always testing myself.
She's skeptical of everything, though. She's a pain in the ass sometimes, really is. She, you know, it's like she's so critical of her own work, and she's so talented. I mean, just her sketches alone, it's like...
Yeah.
Sometimes I want to just crack her in the back of the head and say, listen, this you can't get more, you know, direct than this. This is, you know... she says, oh, I see 10 to 12 people burned and their heads... I go, yeah, 11 miners got killed half a block away from here. And she's like, well, I don't know. I'm like, how do you not know? It's so obvious, you know.
Yeah, of course.
It drives me insane. But, you know, you don't get good unless you're critical of yourself. I mean, you know,
absolutely.
I think people that are really good at what they do are always critical of themselves.
I don't even want to
see myself
listen.
On TV. I know how you feel. I think being critical of yourself is actually a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just hate seeing myself on television. I just figured I'd throw that out.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think anybody would ever want to see me on television, but I don't know if I would like, you know. But here's another question about the reveal. Oftentimes, Amy, when you reveal stuff to people on the show, you're telling them, hey, this is going to get worse. You need to get the hell out of here as soon as possible. You know, how often does this scenario actually happen on the show?
You know, not often. I think it only happened like once.
Mm-hmm.
At the Cedar Park in Texas.
First season of Compo, you told her to burn the freaking house down. You thought that whole building should get burnt down.
Yes. But, you know, obviously I want the people to be safe as soon as possible. So I might be a little nutty with my first, you know, because everything that's happening at the reveal, like, I am just getting all of this information, and then it's me and my guides, and we're assessing what needs to be done. All at this, so I'm listening to the dead, I'm listening to the living, I'm listening to Steve, I'm getting all of the information, and at that moment, that's, I have to figure out what, and with my guides, you know, what is the best thing for these people to do. And so sometimes I might say, like, ah, you need to burn this place up, because I want them to get out of there. You know, I want them to be safe. But my guides are, yeah, and well, they can do this, and they can do this, and they can do this, and this, and this, and this. You know what I mean?
No, so, I know exactly what you mean.
How do you
help the people that are, I mean, that are experiencing some really radical situations? Do you do the house cleansing, or do you have, like, you know, people that you can contact who can come and help them out?
Well, this is something that so for the TV thing, like, I can't do it. Usually when I do my investigations, you know, I'll do it. Or I have, you know, people that are right there that'll, you know.
Yeah.
My personal preference is that the person be empowered enough to take care of the situation themselves.
Yeah.
Because that's the number one thing. If they have that empowerment, they can do it. But sometimes they feel like they can't and they need assistance. So, yeah, another thing that Dr. Roll taught me is always respect their belief system.
That would have
their
to be extremely key.
Yeah.
Yes. Their belief system is the only thing that's going to assist them.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're Baptist, if they're Mormon, if they're Methodist, Pentecostal, all of that comes into play as well. If they're atheist, you know, so all of these things, you know, and I'll try to, well, you need a medium, or you need a priest, or you need, you know, a medicine man, or you need this, or you need this. So it just really depends. And I try to contact as many people as I can to help in the aftermath, but I'm going to go ahead and set up a nice big, a big network.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I did a case about 2.5-3 years ago where they were an evangelical family, and, or, you know, meaning Christian, and they were getting ready to actually forget about their evangelicalism, call in a Catholic priest, because their friends and family had them convinced that they had, you know, a demon in their house.
Okay.
And it turns out, after evidence review, no, it's not a demon. It's, you know, your aunt who's been dead for 5 years. She's just trying to make contact with you. How often do you experience something like that when you're talking about belief systems?
Oh, gosh, a lot. very, very, very often, yes. Very often. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
you always ask them what their religious backgrounds are and if they believe in God or if they don't believe, you know. Now I understand why she asked those questions. Because I guess, you know, people don't, I guess if people, like you said, aren't empowered and don't want to take the bull by the horns, I just never understand why people are like, well, I guess so, I don't know. I mean, to me, that just drives me insane. I'm like, you need help. We're telling you what you need to do.
Right.
You know, grab the bull by the horns and just do it.
And, yeah, but Steve, you as a cop, I'm sure that you are a former police officer. I'm sure you've experienced this where, you know, and I'm sure you've seen it quite a bit where it's like, you know, you go to a house, you know, this woman's husband just beat the living shit out of her. And she's like, oh, I love him. He's going to change. Do you think that the people who experience this have that kind of same kind of mindset?
Yeah, almost like, it's funny. Cedar Park, she said to me, and she used that word, those exact words. She says, I don't know why I'm drawn to this place. I know it's bad for me, but I'm drawn like a woman is drawn to a bad husband. You know, and it kind of brought me back to my days on the street, even as a uniform cop dealing with domestic violence. And she nailed it right on the head. She says, you know what? I know I shouldn't be here. I know it's a bad place. Things are happening here. But I'm drawn to it like a woman is drawn to a bad marriage. So then I kind of like brought me back where, you know, I'll tell people, what the hell are you still living here for if you're going through all this shit? I don't get it. I mean, just you. You know, and I'll tell them, you know, once in a while it'll make it to air, and like last night it made it to ask. I actually said, what the hell are you still doing here? And
yeah.
People, you know, a lot of it's financial. Obviously, we're in tough times. And yeah. But I always look at it pragmatically the way I do my investigations. I just, you know, I look at it's A, B, and C to me. It's a black and white thing for me.
Yeah.
But, it, you know, people are just, you know, I know the place is haunted. I know this is happening, but I just, I don't want to leave. And, you know, yeah. Last night's episode, I don't know if you caught it. The woman
no, actually,
Alabama,
I missed it.
She, I love this woman. I really do, because she just, like, she was all 5 foot tall. She had been through a lot. She should be dead by all accounts after mm-hmm. what happened mm-hmm. to her. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. she's like, no, I'm going to fight this. I'm going to, this is my home. I'm not going to let this take mm-hmm. over my house. This is my place. And she, everybody had that mm-hmm. attitude that we investigated for and went into their home and had that attitude. Mm-hmm. I think they'd be helping themselves a lot more than we are. We're actually helping them. You know, it's, she just said, no, this is not going to happen. This is my home. It's my place. And they need to tell them that. Mm-hmm. You're in charge. You're living. They aren't in charge. You are.
Yeah, I have two more questions before we wrap this up. Amy, this one is for you, specifically on a spiritual level. Why is it that, what are your theories? Why do people get stuck behind in this world?
Oh, again, it's so many different reasons. From, you know, you have the people who are religious in life, who are afraid they're going to be judged and go to hell. You have people who don't want to leave for whatever reason. You have people who don't know they're dead. It just really depends on the situation and that person and what they went through when they died as to why they're still here.
You know, I lied. I actually have two questions after that. This one's actually for Steve. You know, Steve, I'm sure you hang out with a lot of really, you know, manly type dudes and all that. What do like your friends and families and guys on the force think about you doing a television show of this nature? Good question, right?
Yeah, I don't know if we have enough. I've gotten into fist fights over this. Literally fist fights. Mm-hmm. Over,
really?
Defending Amy for that particular reason. The guys well, they're all alpha men, they're all macho, tough guys, and, you know, for a guy like me, and they know me, and for a guy like me, to believe in Amy, they don't believe that it's legit.
Sure.
They think it's all, oh, it's bullshit, you're on TV and this and that, and I get mental, and I get physical, and I'm like, no, she's the real deal. And I can't take that negative, closed-minded thinking. It just drives me insane.
I'd imagine
I was at a barbecue for Father's Day, and somebody that I hardly even knew was there at my cousin's house, and he's like, with this thing with Amy, how this ghost thing, what's going on with it? Is that legit? And I'm like, you know what, I'm about to punch you right in your face if you don't, you know, get out of my grill, because I don't want to have to defend Amy, because in my opinion, if I'm enough to believe her, then that's it, too bad. You don't like it, I don't know what to tell you. You know, I'm not going to justify answers anymore to people. I'm starting to come to terms with just say, listen, I thought the way you did before, and I don't now, so take it for what it's worth, you know.
Yeah.
And that's how I got to approach things now. That's the only way for me to do it, because I'm too old to be getting into fist fights, to be honest with you.
Well, at least you know that. At least you don't
like
have...
I said, the guys I work with, they can be real assholes sometimes.
Oh, well... Yeah. You know, at least it's not like my family who don't want to listen to anything I have to say, even though I've been doing this my entire life. Yeah, they think that it's like of the devil, because I come from a very evangelical type family. So, and it's funny too, as top it on it, I have, you know, converted to Buddhism about 3 years ago. So, but, and this is a very last question. This is going to be it. And this is a question for both of you. What do you think's in store for in the future of the show?
Oh, Amy?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean,
that's why I threw it to her, just to see what she would say.
Do you guys see it going? I mean, you're in the second season right now. Do you see it going farther than the second season? Do you see this like replacing, you know, Ghost Hunters, which I believe is either out or on the way out? How do you see it?
Well, you know what? For me, we're in the middle of filming our third season. We just had to take
third
a break,
season.
So, Yeah, we're actually filming our third season now. We're on a little hiatus. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's looking well for a future episode past the third season.
Okay.
I can't really talk too much about it, but it does look good.
You know, with you, Amy, where do you see your the future of the show, and most especially, where do you see the future of your research?
I'm trying to figure out how to do all of the things that I want to do now, like continuing my research and writing my books and doing the show. And, you know, there's a lot of different things now in my life, and I have to just figure out how to make it all work, basically,
right,
and find time for everything. But I will be, hopefully, writing a book that will kind of go over the research that I've been doing and that I did with Dr. Roll for the last 10 years. So hopefully that'll be something that I can finally just write up and put out there.
I'll be the first in line to buy it.
Yeah, everybody's always asking how to write a book, so it'd be good.
Please proceed. I apologize.
And I'm hoping to, you know, work on other television projects that will hopefully do the same thing that our show is doing, which is helping and educating. I know that, you know, we don't say that because that's not good, you know, to say in TV land, is that, you know, our purpose is to help and educate, but it is. That's my secret agenda. So I'm hoping to do some more projects like that to, you know, because TV is a way to reach people and hopefully help people and educate them.
I think that that's definitely what it's all about, especially in this field. You don't want to just show them. I mean, of course, you know, they see all the action and all the really, really neat gizmos and stuff, but I don't think that there is enough education that's going on out there to kind of like real, because, okay, take for example, you know, I'm not really supposed to, the show on Sci-Fi, it's like they come in there and they're like, hi, we're so-and-so and we're here to help. And it's like, really, help with what, dude? You didn't do anything. Whereas with your show, I see that you guys are actually really making an attempt to help the people that you are there, well, basically to help.
Oh, yeah. I see people that go out and ghost hunt. You know, they go out there for themselves. They want to see what they can capture and what they can say, oh, look what I caught, or look what I got, look at the picture I got, look at the guy talk to me. Us, it's not about what we did for ourselves, but how we're able to help the client. And I think that's the whole point.
And the dead, both, yeah. Well, the living and the dead.
Well, with that being said, you know, I mean, is there any kind of websites or, you know, where people can find out more about you instead of just watching the television show?
Not me. I mean, we both have Facebook pages that people go on all the time. They ask me questions. I usually answer them. So it's just Steve DeShavi - the Dead Files, and people can just, I get comments all the time, usually a lot right after a show airs, and, people ask questions, you know, can you help me? How do I go about starting an investigation on my home? And I'll usually answer them, tell them where to get started. The problem is a lot of people don't have the resources I do, so... Mm-hmm. I try to tell them how to go about doing it with the best that they can get out of it. But, that's way to get. I have no website.
I don't know if Amy does.
Yeah, I don't have a Twitter account either, Amy. So, Amy does have a Twitter account, but I do not. So,
I have a Twitter account. Yeah, so I have a Facebook page, and it's Amy, A-M-Y, then A-P-R, and then Alan, A-L-L-A-N.
You know, again, thank you so much, Amy and Steve, for joining us today. And
appreciate it.
Thank you very
thanks
much
for having us on.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Hi, everyone. It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. This is Cheryl Knight, and I'm here with my co-host for the night, Chad Wilson, although we hardly had to do anything because Rick did the pre-record, and all we did was play it. But now we get to ask some questions, which should be fun. But anyway, I want to thank our guests, Amy Allen and Steve DeShavi from The Dead Files. It was very nice of them to take time and pre-record with us a couple of weeks ago, and I thought it was a really good interview, very insightful. I love listening to it, so I hope you did too. We are here now with our roundtable panel. We're a little bit light on panelists right now, but we do have one of our favorite panelists with us. Chris, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Woo! Hey, Chris, this is Chris Davis. He's with Valley Ghost Hunting. I get so tongue-tied. I don't know why. I think Karen and Rick are better at the hosting job, don't you?
Yeah, I think you do a great job.
Oh, okay, I'll put you on the spot. Thanks, Chris. Hey, Chris.
Hey, what?
Tell us about Valley Ghost Hunting.
Well, we actually founded the team in May of last year. Me, my brother Mike, our sister Kendra, and our sister Trisha all decided to found our own team. And
Cool. We
ended up, at one point we had 25 members. Right now we're at about 16, and everybody's been with us a majority of the past year. But, we've all been doing research on the paranormal since we were kids. And we finally decided to make a team.
That's pretty cool. So it's a family affair.
Yes.
That's awesome. How's it been since you started your group?
Well, we've had a couple of issues, you know, with different members, and trying to train some of the new people was definitely interesting. Because there was some who the only thing they knew about the paranormal was what they learned from TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to the point, we actually had one member who, every sound, whether it was, you know, a mouse squeaking to a dog barking, when we were on an investigation, it was a demon.
Oh, no. Okay. So, how do you break investigators who have some bad habits of those bad habits?
I do what's called the Gibbs slap.
Okay. What is that?
When they pull something like that, you walk over and slap them in the back of the head. Tell them what they did wrong and tell them why
Nice.
It was wrong.
I don't know if I'm going to try that. Chad? Can I try that out on you?
I would use the Mr. Miyagi approach of wax on, wax off.
Okay. That's awesome.
But it's basically, you just have to, you know, tell them, remind them that the TV shows are fake. Everything is not a damn demon.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually it seems to sink into their heads.
Right. Well, I think probably after a little on-site experience, they realize things aren't exactly what they saw on TV.
Yeah, it takes a couple of trips with them sometimes for them to actually realize, you know, and then you point out where I had actually at one point printed out the Catholic Church's comments about exorcism and how there is actually only about 3 or 4 actual possessions a year that they actually realize that it's not always a demon like the TV shows make it out to be.
Okay.
So they need to be more open in their beliefs. So,
yeah.
Or they're open to other, not just demons or whatever.
The problem is, and there's actually only 2 shows that really say everything is a demon.
Which are they?
The rest of them are, you know, they're more, it's something dark. They're not saying evil, just something mm-hmm. dark or angry or mean. But there's actually only two who, every case, it's a demon.
Paranormal State.
Yes.
And...
Ghost Adventures.
I don't want to say Ghost Adventures.
That's what
Ghost
I just
Adventures.
Said.
Every place they go is the portal to hell.
Well, the fact that they always find something haunted, no matter where they go.
Yeah.
That's what gets me.
My theory is that one or more of their members attracts spirits.
That or whatever makes interesting TV.
That could be. Yeah. Well,
I do know Aaron's marriage actually fell apart because he had attachment from investigating.
Well,
yeah.
Mostly Zach had an attachment too.
Yes, but Aaron's was actually like the end of the first or second season. Okay. Zach's was the end of the last season.
So I've noticed that Aaron's lost a lot of weight. I wonder if he's still having issues.
When did we talk to Aaron, Chad, on the show? It was within the last year, I would think. And he did talk about that, and it sounded so sad to have to deal with that kind of fallout and to have it affect your life like that, you know? So, I don't know, but it's definitely, you have to be prepared when you investigate, because things can follow you home. It can definitely affect you. But real quick, we're gonna be also talking to Jenny Gurney here in a couple minutes when she arrives at home. And Jenny's your co-host, right, Chris, on the show?
Jenny's my co-host, and I co-host her show.
Tell me again. When is your show? What day?
Our show
Wednesday?
Is Valley Ghost Hunting is on Wednesdays at 5 p.m.
Okay.
Is that here on Z Talk?
Central?
No, Eastern.
Eastern, 5 Eastern. Okay.
Jenny's is, you'd have to check her Facebook every week to know exactly when. It's usually on Friday, but there was a couple of weeks where she did it on Thursday because she had stuff on Fridays.
Gotcha. Okay.
Hers is actually for right now, it's on a different network. It's actually on PPRS network.
Oh, okay.
Which is run by a very good friend of ours. She actually decided to found her own network. And doing that at 19 is pretty amazing.
Is that Danielle?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that is pretty amazing. Wow, that's great.
She's actually started to make... she's putting together, she's already done her own network. She's now working on putting the teams, getting a bunch of teams together, kind of like Taps and Ghost Adventures did.
Mm-hmm.
A family.
Mm-hmm.
She's working on that now. I know we were actually one of the first ones to join. Jenny's team joined.
Okay.
Because Jenny and me are actually on different teams.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... Yeah, Danielle does, I'll admit, Danielle does amazing work.
Oh, that's cool.
She's been doing it since, she was about 16?
Yeah, she's...
She's actually lives not too far from where we're at, so...
Yeah, I know she's in the Los Angeles area somewhere.
Yeah, I think she's out towards the coast, or she was. But yeah, she's been working hard at it for a long time.
Oh yeah.
Well, our third guest, I believe there was possibility he wasn't going to make it in time for the show, and so hopefully we'll get to have him on, Ryan, on another day. But Chris and Chad, I want to ask you guys a question. Tell me, you both investigate, and I want to know what the best piece of evidence you or your team has caught during a paranormal investigation, Chad. I'll start with you.
My team?
Well, your old team.
Me and you?
Your old team, yeah. Your old team that you...
They supposedly they've caught some video at various places of entities. I don't... I don't know. I mean, I don't know the people personally, so I don't know. It looked kind of real to me, but I mean, you know, you don't really know people unless you've been around them a while, so I don't know. But
so video, yeah. So video evidence.
Yeah, they had some good video. They had one where they're at the Bijou Theater in Knoxville, and it was they're in the women's bathroom on the second floor, and basically you see this white form kind of zoom by the camera, like kind of low. But then they, you know, I think they pan around and there's nothing in there. So you, I mean, I don't know if it was maybe a reflection. It didn't look like it. So
interesting.
Yeah, it's probably online somewhere.
Yeah. Well, Chris, what about you?
Our best piece would actually have to be from Concrete City. It's a small. It's a small mining community within. Mm-hmm. A town around here. They had actually built their own housing area. We were there one night investigating, and I commented about how they used it as a temporary center during World War II before they sent people to the internment camps. And I said something along the lines of, till they sent them to the middle of God knows where. And mm-hmm. all you hear on the recording is,
oh.
And I had noise-canceling headphones on,
yeah.
But I only had them over one ear. I heard it through the noise-canceling headphones, but I didn't hear it with my own ears. I actually stopped the recording and played it back for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That would get my attention.
Yeah, and yeah. I'm on the stairs. Everybody else is downstairs. I'm about three-quarters of the way up, and I've got it sitting on the top step. And it sounds like it was up at the top of the stairs with me.
Wow. Right there with you.
Yeah, it sounded like it was about 3 or 4 feet away from me. And I've actually played it for... we went to Moravia... for the expo there, I actually played it for Joe Andrade.
Mm-hmm.
And James Anito, and I can never remember their other team member's name, but I played it for all three of them, and they can't explain it.
I want to hear it.
I'll send it to you once I get my get a chance. Right now, since I'm up at Tasha's, I... don't have my computer, I don't have it, don't have my flash drive, so I don't even have access to it right now.
No hurry. Chris, do you investigate in the dark with the lights on, both, or and if so, which do you prefer?
We investigate with the lights off, but we use flashlights just so we don't trip over stuff.
And why do you investigate in the dark as opposed to with the lights on?
I actually seem to think that it causes them to not be quite as afraid of you.
Mm-hmm.
Because they see people all day with the lights on. I think that if you have them off, they don't seem to be quite as afraid of you.
Interesting. So, Chad, what about you? What do you think? I know I kind of know the answer.
You know how I feel about this.
What? Talk about it. Tell us your thoughts.
Well, I just think there's less chance of something being mistaken for something else if the lights are on.
Yeah.
I don't know if it really matters. I've heard different theories about, you know, why you should do it in the dark. I know TAPS says it's the only way you should do it, and I'm like, okay. But they don't tell you why. Not really.
Well,
not so many words.
Well, in here, Ghostbreakers in the chat room brings up a good point about why not investigate during the time of the reported incidents.
That's when you should. I mean, if it's at night, whatever, or in the dark, sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of times a lot of these teams do it because it's exciting. And they're in the dark, and it's like you don't know, you can't really see. Like, if you had the lights on, you could see, you know, something bang over there. Whereas, if the lights off, well, you don't know what that was.
I kind of feel like if you investigate in the dark, you're more aware, your senses are more aware of what's going on around you. But then again, it doesn't make complete sense because maybe it didn't happen when it was dark. But
put it this way. If your other senses are heightened because you can't see as well, then you're more apt to pick stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you're picking up something that's normal and you're just saying, oh, that sounds doesn't sound right. You know, it's right. Paranormal.
Right.
I think maybe you should do both. Why not do both? It's not going to hurt anything.
Sure. Why not? I agree.
No, I've actually done investigations in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. you know, gotten the same results that I've gotten at night, where you hear something weird and you still can't explain it. I've heard whispering in graveyards in the middle of the day when there's nobody there.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well,
I know Troy Taylor said one of the only two entities he ever saw was at Waverly, but it was during the day, and it was a doctor. So, yeah, I think spirits can appear during the day. I know there's theories out there about how the light's supposed to keep them from materializing and all that. And I don't know if that's true or not, because, I mean, how do you know if that's true?
Maybe they feel less shy about showing themselves when it's dark. Possible. I don't know why.
But until a ghost comes up and says, yeah, this is why we'd like you to do it in the dark. I mean...
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's fine. I mean, if that's what people prefer, that's their business. I mean, I just...
Yeah.
Sometimes you can't help it because when you go to these places, that's when you're there is at night and in the dark, so...
Okay.
Some of the places we've done, there's never been electricity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, Jenny's sound isn't working... Well, Jenny will have to join us next time with Ryan.
Oh well.
Maybe she'll get her sound, but we actually only have like 15 minutes.
Well, it's like Velisca.
Yeah.
When I went up there with a bunch of people from the sci-fi forums, there's no electricity in the house, so you have to use your own light source. They give you a lantern, but you know what's that got to do?
Well, Bob Gilmer, excuse me, Bob. in the chat room just made a note that his team investigates when the stuff happens, when the reported experience happens. So I think it just depends on, you know, your philosophy, what you want to do, when you have time to do it. Maybe it's, you know, in the middle of the night and it just makes sense to turn the light out. But yeah, I think obviously people get results at both times. So, you know, do what you do. Yeah. So, during your investigations, what is your favorite piece of equipment to use while on site, Chad?
Well, with what we got, I actually prefer the Zoom H2. And I also like the millimeter, even though... If you run both temperature and EMF at the same time, it's supposed to slow the temperature down so you don't get an accurate reading. But it's probably the Zoom, or, you know, if not that, then the millimeter.
Okay. Gotcha. What about you, Chris?
My favorite piece is actually the digital recorder.
Digital recorder. Okay.
You can hear stuff you normally... Everything sounds louder, so you can hear stuff you normally can't hear. And the way I do it is I always have it covering just one ear.
Mm-hmm. So, why... Do you guys use a lot of equipment? Just a couple of pieces? How much do you use?
We have... 4 digital voice recorders. Our digital camera actually just broke, our still camera.
Mm-hmm.
And a digital video camera that is very low picture quality.
Mm-hmm.
We use it mainly just for when we first get to a place, I'll, you know, have my sister do, you know, something saying, hey, this is where we're at, you know, who's there, just for in our files. I like to use it mostly because it's got two LED lights on it.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of using a flashlight, I can use that. But the sound quality on it is just as good as our digital recorders. Okay. The video quality sucks unless you're shooting in the day, but the sound quality is excellent. So I end up actually using, I'll have basically two digital voice recorders on me at all times.
Okay. Chad, what about you? Do you just like to stick to one piece of equipment?
Mainly I like to kind of get the feel for a place first when I first get there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you do your baseline, stuff like that. But, yeah, it's like I said, the H2 or the millimeter.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. I have a very important question that I have to ask, and this will be the most serious question of the entire mini roundtable. If you had to come face-to-face with one of the following, which would it be and why? Bigfoot, a vampire, or a skinwalker? Chris!
Oh! Oh! That...
Something else?
Either the vampire or the skinwalker. Because, you know, I've always believed Bigfoot existed. There's too many stories from too many different places, from too many different countries, for mm-hmm. Bigfoot not to exist. A vampire would be cool just because I want to stake a vampire. But out of all of them, I think a skinwalker the most.
Yeah.
And that comes mostly from the little bit of Native American that I have in me. I've always been interested in the skinwalker stories.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. Jenny in the chat room said, can I say doppelganger? Yes. All right, skinwalker for Chris. Chad, you have to pick one.
Well, out of all three, Bigfoot seems the least intimidating. Even though I've heard some pretty wild stories about encounters with Bigfoot.
Yeah.
But I don't... Skinwalkers are inherently evil, and vampires, you know, they'll suck your blood, so...
All right. Do I have to pick one?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh.
Zombies.
That's not on the list. I'd rather not be a zombie, actually. I think I'll have to go with a vampire. All right, moving right along. Who has an interest in UFOs here? Besides myself.
I do.
I do. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah. Do you think that there's been any one or two incidents over time that you would say, hey, there are extraterrestrials out there, just based on what you've read or heard about it? Or do you think there's really been nothing compelling as far as proof that there are extraterrestrials, Chris?
Well, there's actually one, and people seem to forget about it, and it doesn't make sense for it to be anything like an airplane or something. When Christopher Columbus was sailing to the New World, he actually, in his journal, wrote about seeing three lights several different nights. And they were flying around the sky, around the boat, and they couldn't explain it.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, yeah, what would that be? What could that be?
We didn't even have engines at the time, so what the hell is it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's any natural phenomenon that could explain that, but... Chad, do you have one in mind?
I think just the total amount... itself, you know, of different sightings and crashes and stuff. This kind of says that maybe something's going on. Maybe, you know, we don't understand what it is. But, yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
I just think the sheer amount of sightings and stuff kind of leads to there being something out there. It's like when Project Blue Book, you know, when it finally concluded theirs, I think they said, what, 10% of theirs were actually, cases were actually unexplained. Mm-hmm. But they were able to explain the rest of them away. But still, that's even if it was just one case mm-hmm. out there, I mean, something's going on. There's something out there.
Well, here's what I think. I think along the same lines as you, Chad, because you have so many reports of alien abduction, and some of them can be explained while others can't be explained. And I just think there's too many cases out there to dismiss them as something non-paranormal. But, yeah, it's interesting to think about. I mean, you know, you have Roswell, of course. But I think that... have you ever seen a UFO, Chris?
I don't know. I might have. But no.
Not that you're
it's
aware.
It's hard to tell because some of the reports of UFOs are same as some of the reports that they got when seeing test airplanes.
Yeah. Well, Chad, what about you? Have you ever seen one?
Not that I know of. I mean, how would you know if it was a UFO or not? I could just okay. Here's the thing I get with UFOs is, you know, back in the ancient times and stuff, you had people that saw goblins and witches and stuff. I think it might actually be beings from another dimension, and they mm-hmm. basically put you see what you want to see. You know.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. That's an interesting theory.
It just seems like UFOs have evolved along with man, you know, and they're like almost like they're a couple steps ahead technology-wise,
mm-hmm.
or many steps ahead.
There was actually an episode of Ancient Aliens where they talked about that, and because as time went on, the Romans reported seeing flying objects that looked like shields.
Yeah, and also Alexander the Great.
And. In the Old West, they reported seeing ones that looked like cigars.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're seeing ones that look like triangles,
mm-hmm.
which some of our new aircraft look like triangles.
Yeah.
So I can't remember exactly what they called it. I'm trying, because I remember I did make a note of it, but I can't don't know if I still have it or not.
Well,
but
just
no, I don't have it anymore. I can't remember exactly what they called it, but whatever they did, it the meaning of it actually kind of made sense the way they phrased it.
Okay. Well, just to clarify Ghostbreaker's question in the chat room, I guess I was referring to UFOs, but leaning towards they don't have earthly origins. So.
Or maybe they do.
Maybe they do.
Maybe they come from within the earth or below the oceans.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm talking about something that, well, spaceships, sure. I guess it would be hard to tell because they're too far away unless you have a close-up. But I've never seen a spaceship. So, I've seen a UFO, but I've never seen a spaceship.
But would you really know what you were seeing, though? It's like in Bible times, and they mm-hmm. saw these things, and they wrote them down, this is what I saw, and they described it as, like, pillars of fire and stuff right. like that, or as angels, what was it, is it Enoch or Elijah? Enoch's
you got me.
I got the book in there somewhere, but basically okay. he saw something, he described it, and people made models of it, and it looks just like, almost like what a spaceship would look like, and so they're describing it with the means available to them, and mm-hmm. It's like it could be the same thing today.
So, okay. Go ahead, Chris.
Found it. They actually used to call it cultural tracking, where through different cultures they would see flying objects that were shaped by like something they know. It's cultural tracking.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, we only have a couple minutes left, so I want to ask you guys one more question before we go. And thank you so much, Chris, for joining us tonight. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
Yeah. We Well, okay. One last question, and that is, do you have any upcoming investigations or events that you want to talk about? I already know the answer from Chad, so we'll skip him. Chris?
I've always got upcoming investigations. The problem is sometimes they're the next day. There's actually a place up here in Wyalusing, Pennsylvania that I'm trying to go to right now. It's actually a there's a couple of small cemeteries around here that people have actually reported not so much seeing things,
mm-hmm.
but feelings of dread.
I don't like that feeling.
I'd actually like to go and, you know, check that out.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like fun. Chad, why are you and Teresa talking about Gilgamesh in the chat room?
No, we're talking about Ezekiel's wheel.
Oh, Ezekiel's wheel. Okay.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
That's the UFO that they talked about in the Bible. Where he saw it and he described it, and supposedly he saw it like four times.
Okay.
And eventually he was taken up into heaven. He didn't die. He was taken up into heaven, and he supposedly became the angel Metronon or something like that. Yeah.
You know a lot. You know a lot about that stuff, don't you?
I read a lot.
So, on a party note, Ghostbreaker says that he thinks it's quite possible for extraterrestrials to visit us, but his question is, if they are that advanced, why allow us to see them, or don't they care? And on that note, thanks, Chris. Thanks, Chad. I want to thank our guests from the Dead Files, Amy Allen and Steve Deshavi. And next week, we have a show on August 2nd, and Rick Hale will be hosting. He's going to be talking with Jeff Stewart, founder and director of Paranormal Investigations of New England. And we have a whole bunch of cool guests in August, so stay tuned for that list. We'll be publishing the list of guests in August on our homepage at paranormalunderground.net. So check it out there. And this radio show will be put up on podcast on iTunes and Podbean and paranormalunderground.net this weekend. And you can find all of our other podcasts there as well. So check it out. Thank you, guys.
So who's up next?
Who's up next? We have up next live, if you're listening live, we have Fox City's Paranormal Radio. Nice cue, Chad.
Well, I just noticed them in chat. And so, yeah.
So stay tuned for Fox City's Paranormal Radio, and we will hopefully talk to you next week. Thanks, everyone. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net. And join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.